what ultimately in your own life has helped you kind of not feel like you had to battle your own body and mm-hmm. want to change it anymore?
Yeah, for me, honestly, it was more emotional and mental than like the physical part. And mm-hmm. so once I was able to lock in like mentally, emotionally, what the root of the issue was for me, the physical part was easy. And I think for me, it was always about like not no longer letting myself off the hook. Right. And so for me, it was the real issue was about accountability. Mm-hmm. But then the pandemic happened and I really had to like have a conversation because, you know, I was in the house with like storing food up, not knowing what's happening mm-hmm. and eating ginger snaps and watching Netflix and, you know, gained 30 pounds during a pandemic. So then I had to have the conversation again. And for me, it was really about accountability. And I had to say to myself, like, is there anybody in the world that you would let treat you the way that you treat yourself?
It's great advice.
Is there anybody that you would let you down the way that you let yourself down? And when I say let myself down, it's like, okay, I'm going on a diet, I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to work out, and then I stop and then I gain weight and then I do the cycle over and over again. And it was like, if I just give myself boundaries and hold myself accountable, then I can have a balanced life and it doesn't feel like it's like I'm not weaponizing my food when it comes to like my day-to-day.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Shooters Gotta Shoot. I am your host, Eric Caspera, and I have a great guest for you guys this week. But first, if you're listening to us and you want to watch us, head on over to the YouTube page, which is Shooters Gotta Shoot Podcast. Search it on YouTube. I got the link in the description. Come watch us. We're having a lot of fun with Fonzie in the studio. And if you really want to support the show, you can do two things. One, you can support our sponsor, which is SunsetLakeCBD.com. You've heard me talk about them before. They're great. And not only do they do CBD products, they also now are in the edible game. All right. They got some good vibe gummies that have both CBD and THC. So if you're someone that, if you've ever done weed, you get those anxiety kind of moments and that's turned you away from weed, I would recommend doing this. It's only 3 milligrams of THC. It's a perfect kind of starter edible. If you're not really into them, you want to try them. And we have a promo code for you, which is SGS20 for 20% off SunsetLakeCBD.com. And if you don't like weed, you know, I love their stuff that has melatonin in it that helps me sleep at night. I take those. They have plenty of products. Check them out. Go support our sponsor. And if you want extra episodes, you can join the Patreon, which is patreon.com/shootersgottashoot. So without further ado, I've got a great guest for you guys this week. You might have read her book, Fuck Your Diet. You might have listened to her album, Big Dick Energy. They're very, very funny. Chloe Hilliard, everybody.
Hey.
Hello. Oh, also a writer on Black Lady Sketch Show,
yes.
Which has the fourth season out now,
that's
officially.
Right.
Check it out. I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you.
This is kind of a perfect full circle moment for me.
Really?
You were one of the first comedians I ever met right when I started doing comedy.
Wow. You know, hearing people say that makes me really feel old.
No, not
feel old, but to just to see how great your career has come.
Oh, you know, thank you.
Since
thank
me
you.
First meeting you, doing a Bringer show, right? You
were doing, yeah, I did a comedy class at Gotham, mm-hmm. and then you do the, you know.
Yeah.
Final show is like the graduation, and you were the host that night.
Mm-hmm.
So I got to meet you, and then you always were just so nice to me, so kind.
Oh, thank
yeah,
you.
It was you, a few other comics I met, but I always remember you, and I was always happy to see you.
No, and same. Like, I see your clips and all that stuff. Like, you're killing it. You're doing great. And now she's going to be moving to Los Angeles and putting this out there.
Yes. Well, this is the full circle moment. Is you're born and raised in New York,
yeah,
first of all.
Yeah.
You were in New York your whole life. You went mm-hmm. to NYU, also played ball a little bit there. So another baller we always love on the show. Mm-hmm. But you, during the pandemic, made the jump to LA. I was kind of surprised of just, I don't know, people from New York, it's rare that they leave unless they have to.
Yeah.
You left just, what was the big thing that made you go?
Well, because I had been telling myself that I was going to move when something brought me there, but that's not how LA works. So if anybody's watching, you like, I want to go to LA, I'm thinking about it, you have to go. Because once you're there, then you can be in the mix, but they don't take anybody seriously unless you're already there. You know, also, like, you think that you're going to go there for a week and make a bunch of meetings and like meet an agent and all that stuff, and they will have a meeting on the books, and then they'll go, can you meet next Tuesday at 5? And you're like, I leave Sunday. And they're like, oh. And then so you're kind of like out of the conversation. So you kind of have to be there and meet people and have them vouch for you and then like get into the mix. But I decided to go because it was something that was inevitable. Like, I during the pandemic, thankfully, I was able to like use all of my experience and skills to do stuff online. I did a live stream show called Chloe Across America from my dining room table. And that got a chance for me to mix my journalism with my stand up and like, you know, booking guests and producing and all that stuff, which prepared me for everything that I do now. And then I got a writing job on a show, which was virtual during the pandemic as well. And everybody in that writer's room was like in LA and they were like, you have to move to Los Angeles. Like you have to go, you have to go.
Oh, so you weren't yet still?
Mm-mm, no.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay.
So I worked, so the first show that I worked on during the pandemic was Larry Wilmore. It was on Peacock. It
yes,
was like
I
a limited, that. A limited series, political late night show during the election cycle. And that ended in December 2020 and ended on December 4th, 2020. And then I moved December 5th to LA. And so I did it. And when I moved there, you know, I don't want everybody to think you move there and you get a job. It's like, you know, I was there for a couple months. Granted, it was a pandemic. Everything was shut down. But I, you know, I was chilling. Thankfully, I had money saved up that I can just like get settled into my place. And then I got the opportunity to join a Black Lady Sketch Show for season 3 as a writer producer. And then when that ended, I was able to chill out for a couple months and like really get my bearings. And then I went back for season 4 as co-head writer, co-executive producer. And then now that season is on air now, so you can watch it. But, you know, I know my story is not a typical story of like moving to LA and like getting a job. But I think that everything I had done up to that point connected me with the people that put me in a position now. So it's all about having good relationships, being reliable, being somebody that people want to be around. Cause like when you, seriously, cause when you work in TV, you're doing like 10, 12 hour days. And like, if you have a terrible attitude, regardless if like they would rather deal with somebody who may not be as creatively skilled, but it's good energy to be around than someone who's like a mega star, but a shitty attitude. So
yeah, because it's the whole room. The whole room has to come up with the show. So if one person is bringing down the room, they don't last long.
No, not at all. So So be mindful of like your interactions. Like you saying that I was nice to you. Like I always try to be nice to people because you never know when you're going to see them again. You never know how they're going to come into your life. You never know how, you know, the tables may turn and you be coming into their office looking for a job. And not to say that that's my only reason to be a nice person, but like, just be a nice person. Like it takes nothing to be a decent human being.
Well, they call it the Hollywood no, right?
Yeah.
No one ever actually says no in Hollywood because they've seen it happen a million times of, you will never guess and someone will blow up for something for some reason or get that TV show, get this thing. And suddenly they're in a position of power.
Absolutely.
And you're the one person that said no.
Yeah. I mean, you look at all the comics, we know who the pandemic has like blown their career up because they just took their career by, you know, by charge themselves and said, I'm going to do TikToks. I'm going to do this and do that. And now they're selling out theaters.
Yeah. And it's like Hollywood who?
Yeah.
Yeah. They do the back rip. But it is full circle because I am going out there. I'm starting to live out there. I will indirectly have to be bi-coastal because of one, some of it's work, which is great that I have on the East Coast. But also I have so many weddings and stuff this year that I already have to come back for. But it's kind of a perfect, I think almost a perfect first year of I have things to come back. I think it'll help me avoid any homesickness because now that you've been out there essentially 3 full years.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. About 2.5 years. I mean, this trip, me being here right now is the first time I was like, I think I miss New York. Let me go back.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Cause the other times I came back was like for 3 days. It was like a wedding or like my parents' anniversary or like a friend taped her comedy special. So it was just like, I'm here for this thing or this, you know, this weekend. And then when we wrapped on season 4, I was like, I think I miss New York.
Really?
I miss my family. I miss my friends. I miss the energy here. And I got my bank account got hacked. And that was like the straw that broke the camel's back. I was like, I got caught slipping because I was involved with it low key because they called me as my bank and I'm answering questions thinking it's my bank. But of course, I've been in LA too long because I'm actually entertaining this conversation instead of being like, who the fuck is this on my phone? Like, I lost my edge. And so the night I got hacked, I booked a ticket and I was like, I gotta go back to New York and get street smart because I'm a fucking dunce. Like, I've been eating too much matcha lattes and fucking going hiking.
Reading energy.
Yeah.
Like, the energy of the phone, it seemed, you know, they seemed so nice.
I was so trusting. I was such an idiot.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, no, it's true. I'm serious. And I came back. Yeah. I was like, I gotta be, I'm doing a week. And then, and just 2 days, I'm like, get out of my fucking way. I'm like,
just you know, leave it at the door for that writer's room again when you go back in. But I was going to ask, do you feel like you do see yourself in LA long term, though?
I see myself in LA as far as like being a player in the industry, as far as creating things. Mm-hmm. I want to create television shows. I want to direct. I want to get into feature films. You know, the journalist in me wants to do documentaries. So I want to be in that world. Not necessarily sure if that means residing there full time. I think, you know, having a place there. But ultimately, I would like to have a place where I can like have a respite and be out of the city, both New York and LA. So okay. I don't know if it's in America or outside of America. Who knows? Everything is contingent upon the Civil War and election 2024. So.
Yeah. Okay, so basically LA's home and then a dream is second home.
Yeah,
elsewhere.
Of course, yeah.
But not necessarily New York, just where you can escape.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be New York. New York is cool. Like, honestly, like, I'm a native New Yorker. I lived here my whole life for 40 years. I never lived anywhere else outside of New York until I moved to LA. And now that I'm back here this week, I'm acting like a whole fucking tourist. I love New York tote bag. I got a mug. I got a license plate with my name on it. Like, I'm like, it's fun. I'm like, oh my God, graffiti's back. Because, like, When I grew up here and things got, when we got the Disney version of New York, it felt like a blow because we know that New York is this rough, gritty place with good people, with good hearts. You just got to like, you know how to talk to them and know what you want. But when it kind of got like dumbed down and with gentrification, it kind of became like real sterile and like corny. And I'm not saying that I want to walk over a chalk outline of a dead body, but like I just want a little bit of the grittiness back. And now that I'm back, I'm like, oh, this feels like the grittiness I like. I love it. And
the pandemic brought it back.
They brought it back. But everybody that has gone somewhere during a pandemic and come back be like, yeah, but you can't be here every day. Like it's fun for a week, but after a while it weighs heavy on you. And I definitely believe that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I was going to say, impressive that you grew up in New York and you know how to drive.
Oh,
I feel like that's the number one knock to native New Yorkers.
Yeah, I got my license late, though. I got my license. I definitely failed it the first time I took the test.
I mean, most do.
But yeah, I got my license at like 23, which is really late by American standards.
It's all right. That's all right. We forgive you. So a few years ago, you wrote a book, Fuck Your Diet.
Yeah.
It's great. I enjoyed reading it. I was very proud to see it. So with that book, you did talk a lot about, you know, your relationship with your body and essentially trying to change your body in different ways. And one of the things that stuck out to me was you've tried every single diet fad that there is. Yeah. And I guess what ultimately in your own life has helped you kind of not feel like you had to battle your own body and want to change it anymore?
Yeah, for me, honestly, it was more emotional and mental than like the physical part. And so once I was able to lock in like mentally, emotionally, what the root of the issue was for me, the physical part was easy. And I think for me, it was always about like no longer letting myself off the hook. Right. And so for me, it was the real issue was about accountability. And making sure that I take care of myself. And so I had to have a conversation with myself. And this was really, you know, even when the book came out, I still was dealing with like certain things about like my body image. The book was not the answer. The book wasn't like everything is solved. It was like, this is my process up until this point. But then the pandemic happened and I really had to like have a conversation because, you know, I was in the house with like storing food up, not knowing what's happening and eating ginger snaps and watching Netflix and, you know, gained 30 pounds during a pandemic. So then I had to have the conversation again. And for me, it was really about accountability. And I had to say to myself, like, is there anybody in the world that you would let treat you the way that you treat yourself?
It's great advice.
Is there anybody that you would let you down the way that you let yourself down? And when I say let myself down, it's like, okay, I'm going on a diet. I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to work out. And then I stop. And then I gain weight. And then I do the cycle over and over again. And it was like, if I just give myself boundaries and hold myself accountable, then I can have a balanced life. And it doesn't feel like it's like I'm not weaponizing my food when it comes to like my day to day. It's just like, if I'm going to eat a cookie, then I know that I need to go and walk 4 miles the next morning. Like, that's just the balance that I just have to have.
Okay.
And both are good for me and rewarding, but you have to have that check and balance.
Okay. Yeah. Because I remember I don't know if you still do this joke. One of your old jokes was talking about having a massive weight loss.
Mm-hmm.
And this is way before you wrote the book. It was when I think you were only a few years into stand-up when I met you.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you said you lost over 100 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But then it slowly comes back because if you don't deal with the emotional reason why you're eating, like I'm an emotional eater and I know that. So if you don't deal with the emotional thing, it doesn't matter what diet, what workout, how much you pay for a trainer, it's going to come back.
Right.
And so that's what I mean, like getting to the root. It's not, for me, it wasn't necessarily about the food. It was about what was I trying to comfort? What was I hiding? What was I letting myself off the hook with? And so once I acknowledged those things, then it was much easier to like maintain a healthy diet.
Yeah. One of my favorite books is actually The Power of Habit. Mm-hmm. You ever read that? And a big thing about it was talking about how you always have to find out what triggers the thing that you're doing.
Yeah.
So everybody has some type of trigger and you have to replace it with something. So, mm-hmm. you know, people that give up drinking often then take up smoking. Because instead of having a drink, they have a cigarette and, yeah. you know, it's not as bad as if they were getting drunk and driving mm-hmm. home. And I listened to some podcast. It was, I think it was The Diary of a CEO. I've gotten into that lately. And they did a whole thing about habits and how you make them right around New Year's. And I said, oh, let me listen. And a big thing was just writing down what you're doing before the thing that you're trying to stop mm-hmm. or just taking notice. And I noticed, I thought I was more of an emotional eater, and then I noticed I'm more of a stress eater. Mm. It's when I'm stressed and procrastinating.
Oh yeah.
That's always when I go, well, I gotta have dinner.
I'm a huge procrastinator.
I didn't eat yet. Huge, like all of a sudden I'm like, I got three things to do, but you know what? We didn't eat.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I'll do the trick, actually the workout, the walk, because mm-hmm. I'm in New York, right? Mm-hmm. So how easy is it? Well, I should move a little. Let me do that before I sit and do work. Let me get mm-hmm. some movement. But then on my movement, I'm picking up a cookie. I'm stopping and getting into this. Yeah. And it's because you're just procrastinating. Mm-hmm. So it was hilarious. I thought it was stress, emotions. And I was like, nope. My number one is actually procrastination.
Yeah. I'm a big time procrastinator too. Yeah. I do it. And I'm bad because I'll say, you know what? I can't even start a project until I line up what I think I need in order to complete the project. So for me, it's like, all right, I know I want to start writing, and it's going to be like, I know my mind is going to go into that space where I'm like in the zone. So let me get some food first. And then I end up spending like an hour and 30 minutes looking to see what I'm going to order to eat. Yep. And then I'm like, well, it's already late, so I might as well do it tomorrow in the morning and start early. And so, yeah, no, you got to nip it in the bud. But it's like, again, you just got to hold yourself accountable. Because I whenever I find myself getting into that like headspace, I just have to think, if there was anybody right now who was talking to me the way I'm talking to myself about getting this thing done, would I even entertain it? And I got to say, no, I wouldn't. I'd be like, get out of my face. You're wasting my time. So sometimes you got to talk to yourself like a stranger.
I know. And I'm curious, do you feel like sometimes the negative self-talk almost kind of comes from your background in sports and playing sports? Mm-hmm. And not saying that coach is necessarily negative self-talk, but there is this kind of accountability thing, and they get on you. Because I don't know if it's also much more common in women, but someone told me that from their therapy. They're like, that was the best piece of advice I got, was just, would you work for someone that talks to you the way you talk to yourself?
Yeah.
And it's just that constant kind of punishment.
Yeah.
Whether it's food, whether it's just getting things done. Because mm-hmm. I felt that for years. Anything that goes wrong, I was like, this is your fault. You let this happen.
Yeah. Even if it wasn't, I think that is a sports thing. Even if it's not your fault, you are part of a team and you should have done something to step in.
Right.
And you're like, but I'm not a point guard though. So I don't know why you're blaming me for these turnovers. Yeah. I'm barely getting a ball in the post. So it's a point guard's fault. But it's like, no, but we're a team and you're supposed to help each other. So I think that team mentality, definitely. But I also credit basketball with like really giving me the foundations of being like a assertive, independent thinker and person. And I also, as a tall person, I understand that I have tall person privilege, and you know, the way I move in the world and the way the world responds to me is very different than someone who's like 5'5", and I understand that. Mm-hmm. And I like being a tall, big person. Like, I like being strong. I like being able to do things on my own. To me, the hardest thing is asking for help. So
that's the hardest thing. I correlate with that.
But you know, after a while, you're like, okay, it to help have people come into your life who want to help you is also a blessing, but you know, for me, I think with sports, the thing is, I always know that I'm capable because I think sports taught you that. Like, even if you don't believe you're capable, you're capable.
Or
like,
you make a plan to try at
to
least.
Get to like, what's the steps in order for you to complete this task? Mm-hmm. And I always go back to that. Like, okay, let me sit down. And I love an index card. I love to write down my to-do list. I like to cross things off. And like, you know, and I keep them too. I keep like the majority of my notes and my papers and stuff, I keep them. And then like whenever I'm feeling like, oh, what the fuck am I doing? I can look back and be like, oh, I did that. I did that. I did that. I checked this off. I did that.
Right.
Big or small. Like, it's good to kind of like keep a list of the things that you wanted to do, and you'll be surprised. You look up and it's all done.
Mm-hmm. I get on myself of that. Or sometimes I feel overwhelmed by lists because there's always still more to do.
Always.
So even of a day that I have so much productivity, at the end of the day, the list is never at zero. And it's a constant chase
yeah.
that stresses me out, sitting there being like, I don't feel like I could take one full day off. If I don't open a computer, I don't answer an email.
You gotta take one full day off.
But that's the thing I've been bad at is.
Yeah, you just gotta pick a day and do it though.
Right. But then the day before, I'm stressing.
You gotta learn how to do it. It's not gonna go anywhere. This is life.
Yeah. I think it's just the things that if you're procrastinating, it's always like, this has to get done today. So it's the catch up game.
Yeah.
Of feeling like, okay, I'm really gonna buckle down this week and catch up every day a little bit. So I can have that one day fully off.
No, one thing about me and procrastination, I will procrastinate about something and then I finally sit down and do it. And then I go, that didn't even take that long. I could have did this.
There's always stuff that happens.
3 days ago. I don't know why I'm dragging my feet. Oh, this is so easy. Because a dear friend of mine, he always talks about like the stories we tell ourselves. Like we tell ourselves it's going to be this like arduous task. And then we convince ourselves that we have to do all these things before we can sit and focus. And it's just like, I went to Mexico during the holidays and I met this woman there. It's like this large expat community of like African Americans who left America because America is America.
Yeah.
And she was like, you know, someone always taught me like, just do it now. Like, just do it now. Mm. And I'm just like, okay, I'm going to try. Just do it now. But also I'm talking to someone who's like, I fucking left America and moved to Mexico and learned Spanish. And it's like, if she can do that, I can fucking tackle this to-do list tomorrow. Yeah. So.
Or someone said, of your list, the thing you want to do the least, actually do it first.
Yeah.
And then it'll make you feel like, oh, the rest of the day is so easy.
I know.
And it's nothing.
Yeah.
All right. So we do talk a little bit of dating and relationships on the show. I know in general in life, you do not want kids, correct?
Oh, no. No, no. That ship has sailed.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah.
But I think I always knew. Like, I never played with dolls like that. Like, I would do the baby thing and then get bored. Like, I never was like, I need a kitchen for my kids. I never cared. Okay. I never cared about that stuff. And I wrote an essay when I was like in elementary school, like, where do you see yourself in the future? And even then I was like talking in third person, like Chloe Hillier and her partner, legit wrote partner, not like lesbian, but just like partner, like not like I knew not married. Like I knew I wanted a relationship, but not necessarily marriage.
Oh, so partner in that sense. Yeah. So before it was the term everyone uses. Now we say partner for boyfriend. Everything.
Yeah. But I mean, I was probably like 9 or 10 years old and I was like, lives in a farm country house with her partner and writes books. I was just like, this is my life. And then now I'm like closer to that age where I wrote this thing and I'm like, that still feels good. I could still have like a nice country home somewhere, like with my partner, and I'm just chilling, living life. Like I don't need kids because my parents had my brother and I 15 years apart. So when I was 15, they had a kid and I took care of a kid.
Yeah, you're like, so, I didn't think I got the experience.
Oh, I got it all out of my system. I changed the diapers. I did the bottles. I babysat. I had him. I took him to basketball practice on a train with a stroller in the summertime. Like,
stop. I had a
kid. I had a kid. I had a child.
Yeah.
And he's great now. I'm actually staying with him in his apartment while I'm in LA. I mean, in New York. But no, I got all of that out of my system. And so I don't need to do that again, especially with the state of the world. It's like there's a lot going on to now add on to that. The stress of taking care of a child, if not more than one, it's a lot. I commend all parents.
Oh, yeah.
But it's just not something I want to do. I think I can better serve the world by like, you know, inspiring, creating and developing things versus in, you know, making a bottle.
Well, it's funny with the pandemic, everybody thought it would make a baby boom and it actually had the opposite effect. Because anyone that had kids was so swimming underwater with just the Zoom school and juggling day jobs. And it actually was a downtick in babies.
Listen, my friends were going through it doing homework. They were in there struggling.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad it wasn't me.
Yeah, I picked up like side work helping kids with homework was the whole job. Was just do Zoom school with them and be there because the parents just had enough.
They had,
like, we will pay you to sit with them and have them do Zoom school.
It's a lot. Parenthood is a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, especially if you're doing it right, it's a lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good point. But even in the pandemic, I think it was even if you got money for days, a lot and stressful and worrying.
Yeah.
I am curious. This is also an old joke of yours. You talked about you did online dating back when it was first out, desktop.
Yeah, scary. You wouldn't even tell your best friend that you was online.
Yeah.
And it was dial up. So you had to move furniture and plug it into the wall and pray and hope. And you'd be like, dear God, please let the AOL God send me my future husband. And after hours and hours of searching, you finally found a picture and you like start, it's loading down. You're like, well, his eyebrows are cute. Gotta wait for the rest of that picture to load though. Cause it was old school. It was, yeah, online dating was scary back in the day. I mean, it's scary now, but like, it's weird, like in a different way, because it was, you know, the early adapters. Like, who are the early adapters? Like, the early adapters are a very specific group of people who, like, you know, now is different because everybody's on social media. But like back in the day, to say like, hey, I don't know how to talk to people in person, so let me go on the internet.
Yeah,
it was a weird place.
There also was more of a stigma about
it. Oh, big time.
And now I believe the status 30% of marriages are online.
Yeah,
and they are predicting by 2035 it's going to be the majority of marriages will be people that met online. Yeah. And I don't know if the pandemic shift that even more. Or it's just...
Listen, the pandemic has a lot of my friends paying for matchmakers now. They're like, they're like, online isn't good enough. Like, online dating is not good enough because people aren't honest about what they want, you know? And so I just really, truly wish that, like, men would just be honest about what they can do. So, you know, if you're a man and you just want to have sex, there's a woman out there that just wants to have sex with you.
Oh, for sure.
But if you go into these dating apps being like, I want to date, I want a wife, I want a girlfriend, but you really want to fuck, that's where you mess up the game. Like, just be honest and give people a choice. Just say, listen, I want to date multiple people. I'm not looking for anything serious. Are you interested? We can go out to dinner. I would love to get to know you. Are you down? And they'll, people will be like, yes, I'm down. But I think it's the control aspect of thinking that you need to lie and manipulate that really makes it messy for people.
Yeah, not at all. I was going to say, do you do online dating now? What's your activity in the dating game look like now?
I moved to LA and I did online dating for a little bit. I met some really nice people, some who I'm still cool with to this day. But for me, I think I had to be more mindful of it because of what I do for a living. Because out there, men are bimbos and they will definitely cozy on up to you out in LA so that they can hope that you'll be their sugar mama. Like, legit.
Oh, like sugar mama. Either you're going to say, like, cast them on the show or get them a job.
All of that. Everything. Okay. Anything. Like, they play the long game. Like, they will, like, I want to get to know you and, you know, I respect you. And then, like, down the line, they'd be like, you know, I was thinking about doing stand-up. I was thinking about writing a TV show. And it's like, no, that's not it. Oh, stand-up is... I broke up... I didn't say break up. In New York, this was... Actually, I met him online, too. I met this guy online. He was an absolute nut. Like, he was nut, like, crazy. Like, legit. And also... A lot of times, we ignore red flags because we're just like... For the experience, why don't I just see?
Yeah, I feel like that's also a younger game. Younger me had more patience and would kind of say, let me see where this goes.
Yeah, this is a couple years ago. I was in like my mid-30s when this happened. But with him, I met him online. I think it was like Hinge or which is the one that the women talk to them?
Bumble. It's the Bumble one.
I think it might have been Bumble. But I met him on there. And like after 3 months, I had to stop because and then when we stopped dating, he asked me for 3 things. He said, number one, can I still keep going to the yoga studio that you took me to? So I lost my yoga studio.
Oh, geez.
which I was pissed about.
Yeah.
But then I was like, well, I'm going to go on these other dates when I, you know, like try to like not see him. And I ended up seeing him there twice. So it was like where we were in the same class with like a person in between us. And I was just like,
Jesus.
And then he told me that he always, this is after we stopped seeing each other. He's like, actually, it was like our exit interview. He was like, I always wanted to do stand up, and I think I have like at least an hour of material. So you'll probably be seeing me on the scene doing stand up. Never saw him again, but my friends did tell me that they saw him like at the cellar, like creeping after a show, like standing outside looking all weird. I wasn't there, but they was like, yeah, we've seen him a couple times just like hanging around, and like I think he went to a show or whatever. So, but yeah, weirdo. Big old weirdo.
That's the worst. That's why it's funny. We were talking about social media. That's why it's so appealing when someone has none of it. Well, and I don't know if it's because we're in the space where we have to have
You got to find it. You got to find a good balance, though. Like, no presence at all is a little weird.
Right.
A presence but doesn't update is good.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I think the presence but doesn't update much is probably, like, the sweet spot. Like, they know what's going on. They have an account. They look at stuff. They may have posted, maybe not, like in a year or something like that. But they know generally if they wanted to go on and find something, they could find something, or you can find them. See, that's really about being able to find them. You got to be able to find them and see what they've been posting on social media, because a journalist in me will find anything about anybody at any time.
So when you were doing online dating, I don't know, are you still actively doing it right now?
No, I'm not doing
it. You're off? Clean off? I'm currently off as well. Yeah. I got sick of it, honestly. It was my number one thing.
Yeah.
Especially starting this pod, it made me start actually really trying to date. And mm-hmm. I never tried. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, 30's coming up. And I am someone that would like to be married and have kids, ideally.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can't be mad if you're not trying at all.
Well, see, okay, what do you think trying is like? What's trying for you?
So I think a big part is not making my schedule that I'm constantly booked, especially with work mm-hmm. and doing stand-up and being working at night. Mm-hmm. That's part of it. So it's putting yourself, one, in person in situations where you could even meet somebody.
Yeah.
So even if it is like, I do workout classes, this workout class I like, things that are expanding from your typical routine of where you go. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good one. And a big one is online. You feel this pressure that, well, if you're not even online trying, are you really trying at all?
Yeah.
And I'm a subscriber of, I liked, there was actually a matchmaker I had on here, Matchmaker Maria, she's great. She tells her clients, or she has like coaching stuff with women sometimes, and she says like, look, you kind of have to do a 30%, 30%, 30%. So she's like, yeah, be online, be on the app, be engaging. But if that's what you're doing 100%, you're going to get burnt out and hate it. Mm-hmm. And same with if you're going to random events that has like a social aspect that you could meet people. So not even a dating thing, just, I don't know. It's like there's Meetup, there's Eventbrite, there's, you could go play trivia with friends and meet people playing trivia.
Yeah.
It's like, there's your social aspect. And I don't know, the other 30% could be asking people if they know anyone.
Yeah.
Like just openly saying it and trying kind of any method that mm-hmm. you can. But it's hard because it's like I get frustrated online, but I also don't like being in a bar looking around.
Yeah.
I hate that pressure too. I'm like, yeah. I don't really even drink much. Why am I here?
Okay, so I ask that because I have been like changing my approach to how I present to the world, right?
Okay.
Like of being open and being engaging and making eye contact and smiling with just everybody mm-hmm. in general. Because it also makes my day go by better. And I think also because I've been working on like a TV studio set, long hours with people and so many cast and crew, and you just want to be, you know, endearing and engaging with the people right. that you see. So I'm always like, oh, how's your day? What's going on? Blah, blah, blah. And I feel like it's translated to my personal life, my social life better, because for so long, I've always go, men don't approach me. I'm tall. They're intimidated and blah, 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 blah. But when you just have those nice little gentle conversations that don't necessarily have to go anywhere, but it just teaches you how to engage with somebody without like the sexual relationship pressure, then I noticed that like people go, oh, okay, what's this person about? Let mm-hmm. me engage and have a conversation. And even if that person doesn't lead to a relationship, it can lead to like a social activity where you meet other people. So it's like, right. I'm not saying you, but like for me, it's like, let me stop compartmentalizing when I'm going to engage for intimacy or the aspect of a potential partner. Mm-hmm. And that let me just be the person that I want to be in my intimate relationship with somebody is the person that I need to be with like the world mm-hmm. in a sense of like being open and pleasant and warm and inviting and cheerful and, you know, encouraging, all that stuff. Let me do that now so that when I'm in a relationship, it's not like a switch where I power on and be like, girlfriend mode activated. It's just yeah. like, this is who I am and this is who you're getting, and you see it already. You can see me from across the room and you're like, I'm drawn to that person. Not like, she's not smiling. She sees me, she smiles, it looks weird. Now it's like, why is she smiling at me, you know?
Yeah, well, a big thing is being out by yourself, going out yeah. by yourself. And I have tried doing that. And the thing I think that's the hardest is not being on your phone.
Yeah.
Because that is also just closing you off.
Yeah, you just have to talk. Like, if you go somewhere and you sit at the bar and you're like, you know, not a bar, like not a bar bar, but like if you go somewhere, you just go like, oh, I really like that jacket. You know, you just compliment somebody anything. And start talking to people. Like, you know, meet new women friends too. Like,
yeah.
all that stuff. So yeah, it's been a change for me because I was definitely an introvert and I still am at my core. Mm-hmm. But I also realized that, one, I'm tall. I'm striking, like, you know, you mm-hmm. can't miss me when I'm out. So you're staring at me anyway. I might as well say, hey, how's your day? You know?
Yeah, it is very true.
Yeah.
Or I once got this tip of when you first walk into a room, any room, don't rush to go sit somewhere. Mm-hmm. Stand right by the door
yeah.
and scan the room.
Yeah.
And that actually is the moment a lot of people turn and notice you. So that's mm-hmm. regardless of, you know, size, yeah. what you look like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I thought, oh, yeah, I'm in that New York rush. Yeah.
Like, where am I going?
Getting the
where
thing, give me a table. Not at all just a scan of the room.
Mm-hmm. And smile and be like, oh, hello. Like, I just, before here, I went and stopped and got some Chinese food and I walk in and it's like, oh, how are you today? Good to see you.
Yeah.
You know, like just to, and also especially when you're dealing with service people, like when you actually like engage them and talk to them, like the service is so much better.
because
people are like, I want to say, what's that? Nope. Give me this time. So I'm like, how was your day? What's, you know, like, what do you recommend? And people go, you can see, and especially in LA, because people don't do it in LA.
It's even worse in LA?
It's even worse in LA. Like, people have told me I'm so nice because I just say hello, because people don't even say hello.
That's crazy.
No, it's
I would thought New York would be worse, actually.
No, people in New York see you for being a human being. People in LA see you for a potential opportunity. Mm. And if they feel like you have no value, then there's no point in even talking to you.
Yeah.
So in Hollywood, especially when I'm working with people, the fact that I even know who the gaffer is and I say his name and how's you doing, how are your kid, it's like night and day difference. And also, being in a position that I'm in, I'm like, you know, kind of a boss. So it's like, most people don't even care to know who the crew is. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't care to know who the crew is, but then you want them to stay an extra hour, they're going to tell you, eat my ass. Like, I'm going to stay an extra hour? Like, you want me to work hard for you? You don't fucking know my name. So, you know, I definitely learned a lot about, like, you know, interacting, getting people to want to show up as their best self, because you show up as your best self. And it really changes, like, a lot of things mm-hmm. for you when you really, like, truly identify and give a fuck about a person.
Yeah, there's... I loved that you said the thing of being like, oh, I'm tall and I'm intimidating. Mm-hmm. And I assume, have you had men say to you, like, well, your energy you give off is approachable? Because this is the hardest thing, I think, to change. Because I've met you before, yes. I guess, whatever you're trying to change now. And I always thought you were very friendly and nice. And but also, I'm a tall woman. So maybe that's why I didn't
read.
I'm going to tell you
exactly what it is with men. So all my life, because I play basketball with guys, I'm very comfortable around men. Mm-hmm. But I give off, like, tomboy energy. I give off homegirl energy. I don't give off, like, romantic comedy, sweep me off my feet.
Yeah, that's my whole life.
Yeah, and so the reason why I realized, and this is something I'm consciously changing even at my age of 42. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you never stop learning, right? What I learned is that men want to feel needed.
Yes.
And if you come across as an Amazonian who could chop her own wood and start her own fire and cook her own meals, they don't understand what is their purpose, what's their use, like, how can you utilize them in your life? And so I always felt that I was, like, dumbing myself down by being like, can you help me? But really, it's like, yeah, actually, can you help me? Like, you may bring something to the table that I don't know. That doesn't mean that it's bad. It's just mm-hmm. different. Also, like, you may alleviate a lot of things in my life that I've been putting on myself, where you want to be of service. Like, I think, like, the human experience is, like, you want to be, most people want to be useful, you know,
yes,
like,
somewhere.
Like, even in, like, in New York, yes, we may not smile on your face, but, like, if we see you in need, we'll step in to help you because we know what it feels like to need help.
Right.
And so, you know, when it comes to dating, I've always was the girl that they were like, you're so cool.
Yes.
You're so cool. Like, I love hanging out with you. You're so funny, blah, 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 blah. But they never approached me romantically because I wasn't presenting myself as one, like, warm, inviting, and vulnerable. Mm. And not to say that those aren't things that I am. I am those things, but because I have, like, this tough armor, it was so easy for me to never, like, put those things on the forefront.
Oh, for sure.
And I also felt like everybody needed to work to earn that space in my mm-hmm. life. But now I'm learning that, like, everybody, you can give everybody that space and it doesn't take away from who you are. You get to leave somebody with a genuine experience of you, whether it goes forward or not. But you get to go into it and being like, I had a genuine moment with that person. It felt really good. And then, like, go about my business. Mm-hmm. And so now it's not like I'm safeguarding the essence of who I am as Chloe. It's just like, everybody get a little piece.
Yeah.
Everybody get a little piece and see where it sprouts out at.
Okay. I was going to say, have you heard the pickle jar theory?
No.
Oh, we've talked about it on the show. It's literally, it says, a trick to give men small tasks mm-hmm. to do.
Oh, yeah.
And so they're not even things I absolutely need help with, right? Mm-hmm. So it's literally the idea of, can you open this jar for me?
Yeah. Yeah,
is the pickle jar theory.
And you're, like, absolutely right.
I can hang a picture. Duh. I know how to use a level. It's not hard. But, oh, you're over the house?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, could you do this for me? It'd be a big help. Even though in your head, I'm like, it's not really that big of a help.
Yeah, I could do this in my sleep. I could do it in my sleep. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just simple shit.
Yeah, I remember one time this guy, friend of mine, he was over at my place in LA. And I had, like, we were sitting up on my roof, like, just getting some sun and chilling and talking. And I had my dog at the time, RIP Winnie, but I had my dog at the time and I had like her stuff and like a tote bag with my stuff. And he was just walking and I get to the door and I'm like trying to juggle and open the door. And he was like, let me get the door. And I'm like, Oh yeah, sure. But my instinct is be like, I got it. But now I gotta be, no, thank you. Yes, can you get the door? Or not even wait for you to do it, just ask you like, can you get the door for me? Yeah. And think that there's nothing wrong with that. Like I'm not missing out on who I am. I'm not losing no cool points by being like, yeah, can you get the door?
But that's another thing we'll hold back.
Yeah.
Being like, well, I want a man that would offer and I don't have to ask.
No.
And any man you talk to is like, we don't know.
No, you got to ask. No, let me tell you something. You got to ask, man. You got to ask them exactly what you want. You have to tell them exactly what you want. Even like, wait, don't even wait for them to set up a date. It's like, hey, you know what? I would love to like go out and like go to the like movies or like take a walk on the promenade. Like that'd be fun. We should do that. And then he's interested. He'll go, you know, yeah, we should do that. What day would you like to go? And then they'll follow up. You got to tell them what you want.
Yeah.
Also, you got to think about, you know how many women men are dating and they got to come up with a date every single time. They don't know what you like. They pick the wrong thing. Then they fuck up their chances. Like they don't want to fuck up.
That's why men have like 3 date spots. They take everybody to.
Yeah.
Cause it's just easy to not think about it.
So now you tell them what you want. And if he's interested, he will meet you where you at.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious, what do you think of this theory, especially because you're someone who is very successful and talking with, you know, trying to be softer, more vulnerable. A friend and I have this theory about, we call them soft jobs. And we've noticed women that do not have, quote, soft jobs that are naturally a more nurturing or just, let's just say, not intimidating of just how much money they make. They have an easier time dating because it automatically puts them in this light. That is this like person that could use a little bit of help and I don't have everything and I really could use a partner, as opposed to someone who my friend is. She's a lawyer, corporate lawyer, makes bank. And it's not that she's not a warm person at all, but just she's like, I feel it. The minute a man hears I'm a lawyer, it's like, oh, okay, she don't need me. Or almost they feel I don't make enough or whatever it is. But it's interesting if she has a friend. We were talking about her friend has been in a situation that's just been bad and it's like, she's got to dump this dude. And hilarious that we just added, and you got a soft job. Like, we're like, that's so appealing. You're a social worker? That's so appealing to people. Like, get rid of this guy. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
Like, you won't struggle in the way that we struggle with, you know, doing comedy and things like that.
Yeah. I think that, you know, that's on the man, because I actually was just looking at, like, social media and this guy got roasted because he said that he couldn't be with a woman who makes more money than him. And that's a reality for some people. Like they hang up their hat on being able to say, I'm the sole provider or I'm the main provider for my family. And that works for them. And there are women that are like, yeah, let's sign me up. But for women like us who have the potential to make an inordinate amount of money with no ceiling, you have to be with somebody who's like, I support you regardless of how much you make more than me. And also understand, like, what's the dynamic that you two are creating in your relationship? Because if you're saying, I don't need you to financially take care of me, but I would like to be in a position where we can, like, agree on whatever the split is, then that's first of all, you got to deal with somebody who is mature, financially sound, stable, who understands how to plot and plan a future with somebody that they want to be with. So already you looking at a smaller pool of a person, because there's a lot that they need to come to the table with, because you don't want to be with someone who's like, I'm fine with you making more money than me. And then when you start making more money, they're like, can I get an allowance? And you're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right. If you're especially not looking at a marriage, shared accounts. I mean, even if marriage, a lot of people do not have fully shared everything.
Oh, no. My parents have been married over 40 years and they don't have a shared account.
Right. And my parents do, but they got married. They did get married very, very young. And they were like, we didn't have anything. It was the way of life we knew from our parents. Yeah. But now the trend really is, you know, majority shared and each have their own account to be like, I don't want someone in my ear of why did you spend this on that?
Yeah, I agree. I think that would be the way I would do it. I would have a joint account for all of our like shared expenses and then our own little piggy banks for whatever we want to do.
Yeah. And then the other thing you touched on, I was talking to some men and he said, actually, I think it was Michael Che, broke it down of with the security in women. It's like there's different types of security women want from men. And one is financial security, one is emotional security, and one is physical security of, you know, a man's bigger and can protect you physically. And and when he said that, I was like, oh, it's like I already have the two. So I don't typically look at men for what do you make and can you physically protect me? I'm used to being a bigger person and I've dated men shorter than me. If I didn't, I'm like, I'd be pretty fucking lonely if I was never open to the idea. But then all of a sudden it put me in the emotional part. And like you said earlier, if you're not naturally this emotional person or vulnerable and open in that way, it's like you're telling them, you can't do any of these for me. Like, I'm good on every front.
The emotional part is, I think, the first step, right? Because they can look at you and get you, they can see how big you are. And they, even if you are big, a man is always going to, even if he's shorter, he thinks he's stronger.
Yeah.
Right? And he may or he may not be, mm-hmm. right? So they, even if he isn't, even if he doesn't think he is, he's going to make himself stronger than you. He's not going to concede and be like, well, she can bench press way more than me. I love my big bitch. Like, he's not, you know, he's going to, in his mind, like, if I have to, I can do X, Y, and Z. But I think, you know, when it comes to the other things, it's like the emotional thing is the hardest thing, right? It's the hardest thing because we have to unlearn so much in order to, like, put ourselves in that space to even be soft for someone to say, I'm attracted to this, like, and I hate to say, like, feminine energy because everybody's like, feminine energy, but, like, it is, that is essentially what it is, you know, and you can have the duality. Like, I have a lot of masculine energy, but now I'm learning to tap into my feminine energy and it's paying off. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, like, just even asking, like, I was walking with my friend, she came to visit me in LA and we were walking in the Hollywood Cemetery. And we wanted to find Judy Garland's cemetery. I mean, her plot. And there was these two old guys and they were walking next to us and we started, had a shared moment because we were asking about something and they chimed in. And normally the conversation would go just, okay, thank you. But then I saw one of them had a map and I was like, oh, can you tell me where Judy Garland's map? And he was like, I sure can. He sat down. He was like, and he went above and beyond to like show me where, because people want to be helpful. And I think men, when they see a woman or a damsel in distress, they want to be a hero. And so it's like, even if you know you're the real hero, just let him feel like he a fucking hero. Like, let him be, give him a cape for a day.
Okay. So you know something I've had happen several times, and I've recently been trying to be kind of more that soft at the beginning, is so many times I've had the men were interested in me, pursuing me, and I was my whatever original energy of kind of a little bit more masculine, a little more put off, not interested. And then the minute I was like, oh, I am into this guy, and I started to get soft, they fully would retreat. And part of that is, do you like the chase? What is it? You know, kind of thing. And it made me be like, well, if I want that to stop happening, then I need to be that way more upfront, as opposed to a few months go by, we're dating, 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 and then suddenly I'm doing all these sweet and soft things.
Yeah.
And it makes them flip. It's like the whole thing changed in their mind. And I don't know exactly why.
Because they feel like now, you, now you're locked in, you have expectations.
Right. It's almost like before they were like, this girl's great. That, oh, I don't even know. Does she even really want like a relationship or that serious? Or she's so cool and chill and really doesn't get upset about anything. And now it's like, oh, she really wants to do this.
Yeah.
Maybe that is why.
Yeah. Because now they're, they, you started to set a standard. You know, you took the bar off the floor and they're like, oh, shit, now I got to keep this bar up. Right. And I didn't want to put that much energy into this because it seems so easy because she didn't ask anything of me. And so now,
and even then, I'm not asking. It's usually always when I do something nice for them, like cook them dinner.
Yeah, no,
or
but
bought them a little something. It's all of a sudden, what?
In their mind, it's like, what do I have to do in return for this?
Hilarious. Okay. Yeah.
So they're thinking, okay, now she cooked dinner. Oh, gosh, that means she's gonna think that the we need to do something more serious. I gotta plan more stuff.
You know? Gotta go to that cousin's wedding.
Like that's gonna be next. Her birthday's coming up. When is her birthday? Now I gotta remember her birthday. Now she wants a present. Like,
that is so true. I've done nice things for guys' birthdays and then it's like they're gone.
Yeah.
And it's not even a big thing.
Yeah.
It was just like, I got a card.
Some
food.
But that just, but also that means that those people were not the right people for you.
Exactly.
Right? And so, you know, I think a lot of times we get upset about like our record, you know, but understanding that like it's really about the one win. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, for sure. I don't look at those men and go, ah, if I didn't do that, I'd have them.
Yeah.
I more look and say, oh, the whole time they were never in.
Yeah.
Because the minute I acted in, they completely retreated.
And I think with this idea of in, it's like you can do those things early up top. Like, not necessarily. I mean, I'm not cooking a man a meal up top, but
me either. That's what I hold on.
But you know, but I think like those little things of being like, you know, so without it being transactional, right, you can do things like, oh, I saw this today. I thought of, it made me think of you. And it's like a picture of like a street sign, you know, yeah. like, oh, this is so funny. We were talking about this the other night. Like just little things to be like, oh, I'm thinking of you, or, you mm-hmm. know, you are now in my mind when I see other things. Right. And it's just being thoughtful, mm-hmm. You know, getting stuff that little things, like tiny things that you think they may need. Like, oh, I was at your place. I noticed that, you know, you needed a bath mat, like, and I just got you a bath mat, because also I'm not trying to bust my ass in your tub, so it serves me too, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
little things like that, where it's not like, oh my god, this carries so much weight, and you can be like, it was $6, like, it's mm-hmm. not a big deal, but it's just a little something to also like think about, like making their day go by better, like something so small mm-hmm. that it's like, wow, this is not, you know, groundbreaking, but like it's really thoughtful, and I could actually utilize this thing mm-hmm. versus this like grand romantic gesture. Because when you do grand romantic
oh, no.
gestures,
no, I've learned
that's
that.
When they freak out.
No. I know we do have to wrap soon, Fonzie. Am I good for one more question?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay. So you did also mention you're 42.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, have you ever had moments of that feeling of like, okay, I'm this age and I still haven't found someone to be with, whether it's marriage? I mean, you said you don't want marriage, whatever it is, but you know, I'm 32 and I've had those feelings
yeah.
here and there. And I guess, what advice would you have for somebody that kind of does feel that way, or what helped you get to the place of, I'm okay, like mm-hmm. if I'm not with anyone, I'm fine, it really doesn't weigh on me, especially with the idea of I should be trying.
Yeah.
Because it's so hard to shake the trying thing.
Yeah, I think for me, I'm in a unique situation. Not that unique, but the fact that I don't want children takes a lot of weight off of me to right. find a partner, because I'm not battling this biological clock.
Mm-hmm.
I would love a partner. I don't know if that includes marriage or not, but like I would love somebody who is like, you know, my bedrock, someone who's my companion, my confidant, like, you know, my partner in business or whatever it is. Like I want somebody who I can like have in my corner. But I also know that I want that relationship to be right, and I want it to be easy, and I want it to be beautiful, and I want it to be supportive, and I want it to just really make everything much better. Not necessarily, I'm not filling a hole, you know,
right.
I think everybody go to therapy. I've been talking about therapy, especially since I've been back in New York, like it feels like therapy comes up every day. And I'm like, yeah, niggas need to go to therapy
mm-hmm.
because people, I think here we go like, oh, I don't have enough time, I'm so busy. But it's like, we need to go to therapy.
Yeah.
And so I think that I want a relationship that is supportive and beautiful. And I rather wait and meet the person who does mm-hmm. those things for me than to be with someone who doesn't. And so that, for me, I've seen people who've been married decades and they're miserable. And
yeah.
I would rather be alone and enjoy my friends and family and go on vacations with my girlfriends and, you know, have a little boo thing. And we know that, you know, this is just a fun thing that we're doing because we have different long-term goals, but we enjoy each other's company. And, you know, someone who takes mm-hmm. me out to dinner, who buys me things. Like, I'd rather have those quality interactions in my life than to be bogged down in on a chase for something that hasn't presented itself yet. And I firmly believe the better I am, and I think the reason why I'm okay with being single and having not been in a serious relationship for a while is because I also know that I was really focused on like my career.
Yeah.
And I tell people like my career is my priority and it's never not going to be my priority.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to support that because this career allows me to have the lifestyle that you think is fun. So if we want to go on a trip, the career is funding this stuff for us and for our family when we have a family. So, you know, I knew that that was a priority for me. And I also know that I needed to get to a place mentally, emotionally, and physically where I could actually have and keep a healthy relationship. And okay. so the better I am as a person, however long it takes me, I just know the better my partner is going to be. And I look back in my life at people that I could have settled down with
mm-hmm.
and I would have been miserable and I would not have reached the point where I am right now. And so I'm grateful for letting those things pass and learning those lessons and knowing that the better I am, the better the person that comes into my life will be a match.
Oh, yeah, because you want someone to meet you up here.
I have
not
to.
When you're...
Yeah, I can't be dragging a man to the top. That's
no.
crazy.
And you can't. And also, I've found with men I've dated, you cannot really motivate them. They need to motivate
but
themselves.
Also, you don't want to be in a situation when you are a powerful woman with a vision. You don't want somebody that's going to nitpick, who's going to destroy you, who's going to get in your head, who's going to like steal your money. Like, you know, you look at Wendy Williams. Like, Wendy Williams is a shell of a woman because her husband was her manager and cheated on her and got another lady pregnant and got a divorce and wanted all her money. Like, you know, you think about these people who are like, oh, this is my man and he holds me down, and it's like he might be holding you back.
Yeah. Actually, very true. Mm-hmm. I agree. This is great. I'm so excited to have you on. I know, on that note, he could be holding you back. Anyway, definitely check out Chloe. What's your handle?
Chloe _Hilliard on Instagram. And I'm going to be dropping my athleisure line, Fuck Your Diet.
Oh, really?
After my book. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Like hoodies and joggers and hats and stuff like that. So look for that soon. I'll be releasing it.
Oh, it's awesome. This summer. Yep. Yeah. And if you're ever, you're in New York this week.
Yes.
But you're in LA. You still do stand up. Yep. So. Check her out. Look at her website, ChloeHilliard.com.
Yep.
Check out her shows. You want to check it out. And watch Black Lady Sketch Code because it is very, very funny.
Thank you.
It's on HBO. Check that out. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And we'll talk to you guys in 2 weeks. See ya. Bye.